This is Mindcraft, a podcast series in which we aim to destigmatize mental health one podcast at a time.
Join us today to learn more about safe classroom environments.
Hello everyone, and welcome to Mindcraft, a podcast series through which we aim to destigmatize mental health one classroom at a time.
I'm Sasha. With me here is Manjeet, and in today's podcast, we will discuss how teachers can create a positive and safe classroom environment.
For that, we have invited a guest speaker with a long background in teaching to answer the question for us. Maria Popovic is an experienced teacher, methodologist, and educational consultant. She has taught students of various ages from more than 20 different countries and has worked in both the formal and informal education sectors.
Maria's worked in different schools all over the world, such as in Ukraine, in China, and in Thailand, and also remotely taught students from countries such as India, Finland, Malaysia, and Germany.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, to start off, I want to tell you that as part of our project, we did some secondary and primary research here in Portugal to find out more about how students' mental health is handled in schools across Portugal. We found that it is quite common for schools to ignore general mental health struggles of students, and instead teachers and counselors focus mainly on students' academic excellence. As a result, many students that we surveyed or interviewed expressed feeling uncomfortable talking to their teachers or school counselors about problems at home or general mental health issues. They felt distrust toward their school, toward their teachers, and sometimes even their peers. And as a result, this led to a cycle of negative feelings. So do you think this is a common issue among different schools in which you have worked worldwide?
Yes, definitely. I think it's the issue in most of the schools, and I don't think it has a lot to do with the culture, even though we know that in some cultures there is a stigma on the conversations about mental health, or in general on people who have certain mental health issues. But I think that it just has to do with the environment in schools. And unfortunately, a lot of teachers, they abuse the authority and they build this distance between the teacher and the student. And that is why students don't feel very safe approaching their teachers and counselors. And in general, the classroom becomes very teacher-centered, mm-hmm. where the lessons are not about students anymore, but about the teacher and what is comfortable for the teacher. And that's what leads to this issue, I believe.
Yeah, I actually had like a similar question related to this, that oftentimes with my experience studying in a Ukrainian school, at least, I felt that students often didn't have respect for their teachers. And when they did, it was not real respect. It was respect based on fear of the teacher. So as you said, there was a distance between the students and the teacher. And so how do you think a teacher can find the golden middle between being too strict and have the children fear them, or being too laid back and have the children like not really study in the class?
Well, I don't think that fear is the synonym to respect. And I think that when we sort of respect someone because we fear them, it's not the true respect. It's we don't want to get in trouble. So we're trying to keep ourselves safe. That is why we're quiet, we're participating somehow, but it's definitely not a healthy and safe environment. Unfortunately, there is a myth among a lot of teachers, which there is this phrase, don't smile until December, which basically means that when you start a semester in September, you have to be very strict for the first three, mm-hmm. 4 months, and only then you start acting as a friend and open up. I personally disagree with this strategy, and I think what is meant here is be structured from the very start of the semester. So I think that for the teachers, it's very important to understand the difference between being strict and being structured. And that's how we can reach the middle in this problem. Because if you are strict, it automatically creates a very unhealthy and scary environment for the student to learn. And they would be afraid to share their thoughts, and they would be scared to participate in discussions. Of course, not all the students, but a lot of them. So I think that you can still be quite friendly and start smiling in September to your students, but you need to bring up a very precise structure into your lesson and build expectations from the very beginning.
Yeah, adding on to these points, something that was quite a common occurrence in schools in India was the fact that teachers from more theoretical subjects would take up the free classes that students got that were quite central to their mental health, like physical education or music or arts. And I think all of our listeners from similar environments would agree with that. How do you think teachers should balance their curriculum in a way that these quite important lessons are not usurped by academic courses?
First of all, I would like to recommend one TED Talk to all the teachers and everyone, really. I think it's one of the most viewed TED Talks. It's by Ken Robinson, Sir Ken Robinson. And the TED Talk is called How Schools Kill Creativity. And it exactly addresses this issue that somehow in all the countries all over the world, the most important subjects are English and math, or the national language and math. So the focus is mostly on those two. And as you've mentioned, arts and crafts and music, of course, they're very important for students' mental health. So I think that, unfortunately, it should come from the top, from the educational reforms and from the system. But if you as a teacher have a very friendly group of educators in your school, you can have a conversation with them and create maybe certain cross-curricular projects on how you can still focus on math and physics, but also implement certain arts and crafts. The good way, for example, would be have the student to create a website or a poster if your school does not have access to technology based on certain scientific topic, based on math topic, but then design it, decorate it. So that would be that art aspect that the students might need. So again, the communication is the key, I believe.
Yeah, that's a great idea. My school used to do that. We sometimes did like these science fairs where you also have to design things and do research. And it was a great combination that kind of encouraged me to do science, even though I didn't like it. So I think it's great advice.
So I agree with Sasha. That's a great idea. And some of the best experiences I have had personally have also been in projects that included multiple disciplines and allowed us to go beyond the theoretical aspect of a subject. However, it's quite common for teachers to either be one of two ways, which is be the cool teacher or be the so-called strict teacher who everyone falls in line with. And it was often the case that some students would not take the teachers who were more friendly seriously, while fearing the teachers who were strict and not growing in their class, but just doing certain work out of sheer fear. How do you think teachers can ensure that students are growing and learning while not negatively impacting their mental health?
Well, as I've mentioned before, I don't think that fear is a great way to motivate your students to learn, because this whole narrative that, for example, giving extra homework as punishment is definitely sends a negative message about learning. So I don't think it's a good strategy. And again, I think that a lot of teachers are confusing discipline and rules and establishing clear expectations in the classroom with being strict. If at the beginning of the semester, for example, I tell my students that their classroom participation makes 30% of the grade, and no matter how friendly or unfriendly I am, they know that if they don't participate, they get a zero for that day. And I can be the friendliest, the coolest teacher ever, but they still will get a zero. And this is when it's important to stick to your rules and promises. And I noticed that a lot of inexperienced teachers or teachers who want to seem too friendly because they're maybe scared that the students are not going to accept them as new teachers, they do this. They do not keep the promises that they make. So they can threaten the students that, oh, we're going to have a pop quiz tomorrow, but then they forget and they actually don't have the quiz. So I think the structure is the key here, and the teacher has to be a great time manager and a project manager as well. So at the beginning, in your first class, in your first week, it would help if you as a teacher establish very clear expectation. And again, your teaching style can be friendly, can be loud, can be very fun and entertaining. But if the student doesn't do their homework and you've mentioned it and you've made it clear, then the student gets a zero. That's it.
Okay.
So in addition to sticking to boundaries and their promises and their objectives, how do you think teachers can walk the line between disciplining or setting clear goals for their students while not punishing them or giving them extra homework? Because as you said, it sets a negative objective towards learning. So what are some ways in which the teachers can encourage students to set clear goals and follow them without negatively impacting their perception of learning?
Well, I think that there are two things that were very effective for me, at least. The first thing is when you're establishing those rules and goals, you might need to involve your students in it. So from the very beginning, having the conversation with them about things being fair or not fair. For example, ask them, is it fair? Let's agree that it's fair that if you don't complete the assessment, you don't get the points. It is fair. Okay, we agreed on it. And then throughout the semester, you would remind them that this is something we've discussed. So that again comes to very clear expectations. And you need to listen to your students as well, I believe. And for example, I know that it's a norm in a lot of countries for the student to stand up when the teacher asks the questions and the student has to answer. But I don't see the harm in agreeing with the students that they, for example, don't want to stand up, or they want to stand up when it's a long answer, but they don't want to when it's a short answer. So little norms like that, the rules on how we participate, what exactly we do in the classroom, how we submit our homework, how we ask to go to the bathroom, all of those things, they can be discussed with the students. And then you can meet somewhere in the middle to make sure that the students agree that it's fair and you as a teacher also establish the very clear goals. And the second thing that I believe is very effective is teaching your students how to set SMART goals for their learning, establishing the norm that you want the students to be responsible for their learning and not to come up with silly excuses like the dog ate my homework. So we as teachers, we want our students to learn, but we don't actually teach them how to learn, how to study. So I think all of those techniques of time management and taking notes, those should be implemented in our lessons. So if you want your students to take good notes, spend the lesson on teaching them not the topic that is the focus of your month or the week, but the actual technique on how to take notes. And it will give them a lot of support, not only in school, but for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, I think that the advice of including students in the decision-making turns the classroom from being an authoritarian environment where the teacher dictates the goals for the students and how they should behave into a more into an environment where everyone's opinions are welcome and everyone can speak up. So I think that that would be very helpful.
Like almost like a community, right? And I actually have a question related to that. So you've said quite a lot about how to establish a almost like equal, nice relationship between students and teachers. But what would you say about student-student relationships? So oftentimes some students can feel less comfortable in the classroom because of status, hierarchies, bullying, many, many reasons. It could be also like social status, financial status. Do you have tips as to how to unite all children in the classroom to feel comfortable with each other and open up?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's a common issue. And I think that there are multiple ways to deal with it. And one of them that has worked in my classroom is involving students in some form of a group project where the whole class is participating. But with that, unfortunately, you have to be very careful because not all students can equally participate. So if you give the same role and the same task to everyone, it can lead to even more disagreement and conflict in the classroom. So if you know, for example, that you have certain students who are good at drawing and other ones are good at speaking, then you would give them certain responsibilities that would be based on the skills that they have and they want to improve and things that they would like to do. And I think that definitely a lot depends on the teacher, and you can just occasionally bring up the conversation about things being different and people being different. And I know that it's a very big issue in a multinational, racial and cultural classroom. Mm-hmm. And again, for this, you would unfortunately, because I know that it's very time consuming, I think modify what you teach and bring up a little bit more information, a little bit more, people into your classroom from other countries and cultures or socioeconomic status. And just having the conversation about those people is very important. And I think that is something that would make the students relate to the curriculum and other students to build respect for their friends and peers. But unfortunately, a lot of things come from the family, so it's not everything is under our control as teachers. And that is why sometimes it's a good idea to talk to the parents.
That's really interesting. As to these group work exercises or activities, I've always been wondering, what is the best way to split students into groups? Because there's multiple ways. There's when students can choose their own groups, or when it's randomly distributed, like through a spin wheel or something, or if the teacher assigns groups. What would you recommend to do?
I don't believe in random grouping because, let's face it, there are weaker students and stronger students. And obviously, if you randomly group the students and all the weaker students end up together, they will probably not do as well as the other group, and they would not feel good about themselves. So I believe in grouping the students, in mixing the levels, the skills, and definitely it should be a teacher assigned group. Also, as a teacher, it would be nice to be aware who is friends with whom and who is in a conflict with whom, just to avoid different and uncomfortable situations in the classroom. And it is also important not to put extra responsibility on students who are more successful in a certain subject or skill, because the technique that was used by a lot of teachers in my school is sitting the girl who is the best at the subject and who is an A+ student with a very naughty boy, by that putting the responsibility for the behavior and academic success of that boy onto that poor girl that is already stressed because she has a pressure to be the best in class. So I don't think that works when it comes to work in pairs, but in big groups, definitely we can mix up the students who succeed in a subject and the students who are struggling. It is just very important to give every student a chance to show their best skills. So if you know that there is a student who's struggling academically, they definitely have some talents and some skills that they would love to demonstrate. So I think that it will involve a lot of individualized instruction and designing the project and the lesson just to adhere to everyone's needs might be challenging, but definitely the results will be great.
Yeah, I think that's why a teacher's job is so much more than just teaching the subject, because of this individualization. You pretty much have to keep so many things in mind all at once.
Thank you for that insightful answer. But keeping that in mind, I would like to ask you how we can keep students accountable, especially in cases where, due to various reasons, they might be bullying other students or not treating them well, or not behaving well in the classroom and preventing other students from learning effectively?
That's an interesting question. And if teachers knew a definite answer to that question, the bullying would be non-existent. Unfortunately, it still exists and it's a big problem. But I think that, first of all, you need to know and be very clear about what is the procedure for reporting certain unwanted language and behavior in your school. And then based on that, you can build up your strategy, because I know that some schools, they have detention systems. Some schools have immediate call to the parents, which is not always the good strategy, because it only makes the kid angrier. And then with all of that negative energy, the kid comes back to school and keeps doing what they were doing. And I believe that it also depends on the culture. But I think that, again, it comes to establishing norms and also discussing with the students what should be the consequences for violating those norms. So have this conversation with your students. Ask them, what if I notice that this and that is going on in the classroom? What should I do? What do you think is fair and unfair? And of course, the procedure would be very different for a younger student and high school students, because high school students, they can have some very complex relationships and conflicts, while I believe that it's a little easier with younger students, because you can just involve them in some game together and they would be fine in 5 minutes. So I think it's a question of the policy of your school. It's a question of the age of your students. And again, the norms and the rules that you've agreed on.
Thank you so much for that answer.
So I was wondering, in terms of the modern world, students are often involved in technology, especially nowadays with studying being often on laptops or on tablets. So how do you keep a balance as a teacher? How can you help students keep a balance between their technology intake and encourage them to actually be present in the real world? If that's something that, for example, that's something that parents are quite concerned about nowadays, but at school as well, how do you minimize their technology time?
I'm also concerned about it, because what pandemic has shown to all of us is that we have no idea how to teach online if it's a long-term full-time studying. And thankfully there are a lot of tools that we as teachers can use, but it definitely does not really help us to keep the balance. But what I would like to start with is technology in a classroom. So if you're teaching in a physical classroom setting, don't be afraid of using technology. It can help for kids, let's say, with anxiety to participate. It can help to speed up certain discussions and certain activities and make your life as a teacher easier as well, because a lot of quizzes and assessments, they are done for you, and you just need to share a link and then the students will have a lot of materials and it will be more interactive. And one thing that I believe is also our responsibility as teachers in the world of technology is to teach the students how to use technology for learning and not only for entertainment. Because I faced this case when I was teaching the course that was focusing on public speaking and presentation, and also making your own presentations online. I was surprised that high school students who spend most of their time on their phones and computers, they had no idea how to create a slide. They don't know how to use basic software. And those were like 16, 17 year old kids. And that was very confusing. And that is why I believe that we need to emphasize that technology is not something to shame students for. It's something that we can use as an ally and just teach the students how to use it. But in the online classroom, I think that it comes to conversation with the parents, because, of course, we cannot control the activities that the students are involved outside of our online classroom in their home. I think it would be good to give students certain assignments that they can do outside. Like if it's a group of younger students, they can go inside and pick up some materials. And for example, if you're teaching science, they can go outside and take photos of insects or something like that. And if it's high school students, you can send them to the library to do research with actual books made of paper. And that maybe will make their experience a little bit different. So I think that it really depends on the setting that you have and how good are you with technology? Because I think that lately I've come across a lot of very amazing websites and amazing tools that the teachers can use in their classroom. So I think we as teachers need to keep doing our own research on that.
Okay.
That is very interesting to hear. And it reminds me of an article I read about a teacher developing a software which would help students with ADHD study better because it would provide them with constant simulation during, for example, a test or during a class so that they would still keep their attention on the curriculum. So tools like that could be very helpful in the classroom. But at the same time, technology often inhibits students from going the extra mile in terms of engaging their own thoughts and bringing their own perspective because of the amount of information that is available on these platforms. How do you think students can engage more in classrooms in an online setting or with availability of technology?
Well, first of all, we need definitely to address the issue that the skill of critical thinking is now the key because of all the information and inability to check everything. So especially with the recent development of different AI technology that can basically write an essay for your student. But as a teacher, I mean, I can definitely tell. But I think that it's just worth bringing it up in your classroom and teach the student that not everything they see on TikTok and not everything they read on the internet is true. And maybe even bring up some articles and try to analyze and discuss why they include some fake news or irrelevant information or the research that was done maybe 20 years ago and why it's not relevant nowadays. So I think that definitely we need to bring the topic of security with our students and also the critical evaluation of the information. But in terms of engagement, I believe that it's more difficult for a teacher to make students engaged online, definitely. Also because as a teacher, I don't see what they're doing. They might be reading something or just playing a game while I'm talking to them. I know that a lot of teachers are even struggling to make their students turn the cameras on. And again, it comes to establishing rules and norms. But definitely it all comes from the teacher. The engagement would always come from the teacher. So I think that making your students involved in designing, in designing curriculum, in choosing the topics that you're going to talk about is the way to engage them more, to just have them involved and make sure that you're teaching something that is interesting to them. I know that it's difficult to do in certain subjects. And I spoke to quite a few math teachers who complained about it and said that they don't see the way to bring up the topic. And it's not as easy for them as for language teachers, for example, who can just basically have a discussion the whole class. But I think that if you spend 5-10 minutes of your class as a math teacher for a discussion, for a reflection on their online learning experience, and also collect feedback from your students about their online learning experience, I think that would be very good for their progress and also your experience as a teacher. And in this case, again, collaboration with other teachers and creating some cross-curricular projects might help for engagement.
So it seems almost like communication and collaboration are the key aspects of almost any issue that has to be addressed in the classroom. And so following that, I was wondering, when it comes to individual cases, so for example, having to approach individual students that either are isolated in a class or are causing trouble in a positive environment in a class, how would you advise teachers to do this without the student feeling attacked so that they can actually receive the feedback well?
Well, first of all, again, you might need to check what is the procedure of reporting such behavior in your country, because I know that some countries like the US, they have very clear procedure and the list of instructions of what you should do as a teacher, and then you can invite the professional to your school. But if you don't have such a support, you just can start with casual conversations with your students, just checking with them, asking how they're doing. And I don't think that it's a good idea to do that with one student. So if you need to approach one student, choose three. So let's say you need to talk about one student about their progress. You can ask four students to stay after the class, and you ask all of them. So that's how you start. Because of course, if you ask one student to stay, they will feel that there is something is wrong and you have a problem with how they participate in the class. So, and from that, step by step, you can start building more trust and approaching the student one-on-one, and then, judging by their responsiveness and behavior, you can either involve the parents or the counselor, or just maybe talk to the student and ask them what you can do to help them. And don't assume that the student is going through something. Just always ask, because sometimes we as teachers are too concerned. And sometimes we're not concerned at all. Sometimes we are angry at our students because they're misbehaving, but maybe we don't know a lot of things that they're going through at home or with their friends. So I think it's always good to ask the student, but starting with building that trust between you and your kids, your students.
Okay, and specifically, I think we haven't talked about the international students yet, because you've mentioned that you have experience working in international settings, and I'm guessing you also had classes where you had kids from multiple countries. Is that right? So how would you say you could establish a comfortable environment for a class where kids may be very culturally different from one another?
Yes, that's correct. I think it starts with the way the classroom looks like. And if you know that you're going to have students from certain countries and cultures, you can just bring the visuals into your classroom. Let's say if you're teaching science, you can find some famous scientists from the country where your students are from and put them on the walls, or just put some flags and decorations and so on. Don't bring attention to that, because the students also might feel embarrassed that only because of them, especially if it's only one international student, you redecorated the whole class. No, but if you do it step by step, and then occasionally just change something in the environment, I believe it works pretty well. And also I'm not sure if it's possible in all the countries, because the level of flexibility in terms of the learning materials is different in every country. But if you have that flexibility, again, you can occasionally bring up certain texts, certain materials that are based on the events that are happening in the place where your students are from, just to make them feel more at home, just to make them recognize at least something that they saw in their previous school or in their home country. And if you're teaching the online classroom and you're creating different online materials, printable materials, presentation, always ask yourself, do I include enough diversity in the images? Because, for example, when I am teaching Chinese students and I'm looking for images of families or people doing certain things, most of those people, they don't look like they're from China. And I know that my students would relate more to the images if they see people that look like them. But it, of course, doesn't mean that I only have to use the images of Chinese people and Chinese students. I need to bring diversity, and especially in China, for example, as we know, it's kind of a closed culture, and there are not a lot of people who are immigrating there from other cultures. So I think that it's just important to ask yourself a question: what can I do to make my learning materials more inclusive and diverse?
Thank you for answering that question. Yeah, that totally makes sense. I also know that it's a common thing for international schools to organize like culture weeks or cultural events, for students to, for example, bring food from their own country or, I don't know, perform a song from their own country. We actually had an event, like a series of events like this in our own university. And I think nobody was really scared to present their culture. Everybody was really excited. So I think it's a useful thing to do.
So coming back to the topic of diversity, a lot of cultures, and I think most cultures, incorporate a feeling where academic excellence is put above all rest. And when students are not doing great academically, they may feel down and feel like they are not being their best selves. However, how do you think teachers can help them realize their potential across disciplines?
It's very dangerous when kids are involved in such a situation and this mindset of we only love you if you succeed, we only love you if you do good, is present at home and at school. And I think it's worse for the teachers to educate themselves a little bit on the philosophy of fixed mindset and growth mindset, where basically the fixed mindset is a belief that you have certain fixed set of skills and abilities and they cannot be improved, and that failure defines you, and that if you constantly fail at something, it doesn't mean that you can ever succeed. Well, the growth mindset tells you that you're flexible, your brain is flexible, which is actually scientifically proven, and that failure is just another learning opportunity. So basically, it teaches you to accept failure and to love failure. And I think for educators, the great strategy is to praise not only the achievement, but the effort. So praising the students for the effort they've put in their work, for the time they've spent doing something, and not only praising the numbers, like the grades or the number of sentences that they wrote without mistakes, but praising something else. Let's say the style in which those sentences were written or the handwriting, and just focusing not only on the negatives, but on the positive sides as well. And I've heard even of some teachers asking their students, let's say every week, every Monday, to tell them how they failed during last week and what they've learned from it. So I think this mindset of failure not defining you and of actually being a learning opportunity and just giving you a signal of what to focus on, it just might be great. Because the danger of fixed mindset is that the students feel hopeless and they don't want to put more effort. They just believe that they will never achieve anything, and then they turn out to be right, because if they don't put effort, they don't achieve what they wanted to achieve. So I think that's an important conversation to have with your students. And you can even set up the example. You can make a few mistakes during the lesson and see if any students notice, and praise them for noticing your mistakes and showing them, even telling them maybe that you've done it on purpose, to show them that it's okay. And even teachers make mistakes, and we don't know all the answers to all the questions.
Yeah, you know, this kind of gives me the message that you're trying to promote a reflection within the students, self-reflection. And I've heard across many areas in the past few years that it's very beneficial for people of all age to do journaling. And of course, maybe for the small kids, this is too early to start journaling. But do you think teachers could also try to promote this in the classroom, maybe even dedicate a time at school for self-reflection?
Yes, I think it's a great way to promote, first of all, responsibility for your learning, and second of all, just the analysis of what works and what doesn't work for you. And in general, it all depends on the style and a prompt that you use for this activity. And you can just provide the students with a variety of sentence starters. For example, today I've learned this and that. Yes, a very basic one. Or you can ask them to describe what didn't work for them, let's say what learning technique didn't work for them, or what they didn't understand, and then give maybe you as a teacher feedback. What do they think the teacher can do to help them understand the topic? And this is a great way to collect feedback, also to identify the student's mindset, to have the students actually think about their learning experiences and personal experiences as well. If you're implementing any form of social emotional learning activities in your classroom, reflection is also a great tool because it teaches the students to recognize their emotions that in many cases can be very negative, and then learn what to do from there. Basically, this is the self-coaching technique that you can teach your student. Describe what happened, reflect on it, see what they can take away from it, and see how they can change their approach to the situation.
Yeah, I think journaling and reflection would be great activities for students of all ages, and just taking that little bit of time every day in the classroom would be very helpful in setting that as a habit for a lifetime. And following up on that, I think it's time for us to reflect on your insights today. So what are some of the main takeaways that you would recommend from all that we've talked about today?
Well, for the teachers, I really would like to suggest them setting up very clear goals for both the students and themselves, what they want to achieve as teachers during the semester or the academic year, then have the students involved in setting up those clear goals and expectations. Listen to your students, get the feedback from them. Don't be afraid to get feedback. And have a conversation with the counselors, with the families, with the students, with everybody who can help you out to establish the safe environment for the students to learn and succeed. Promote collaboration and growth mindset. Teach your students that everybody has failed. Find out some success stories of some businesses who have succeeded on their thousandth attempt to create a business, and connect their classroom experience to the real world. Make them feel safe. Make them feel like what you're teaching is relevant to them. And I think you would get a lot of great feedback from your students, and that definitely will help them succeed in such a positive environment.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Maria. I hope that our conversation was as helpful to our listeners as it was to us.
Definitely. We enjoyed having you today. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
In this episode, we have learned how structure, that is clear goals and expectations from both students and teachers, is better than strictness. We have also mentioned the idea that teachers work with the students, not for or against them. We have also discussed the importance of feedback and reflection in the classroom and how improved communication makes the school experience better. We would like to thank the support to Casa do Impacto in Lisbon. This project was assisted by Forward College.